Welcome to the White Book Podcast, the original A Game of Thrones LCG podcast.
Originally founded in 2010, as Two Champs and a Chum, we decided to rebrand when the game relaunched in the second edition. A huge thank you goes out to Fantasy Flight Games and George R. R. Martin for this game and the world we love, and of course to my co-hosts and you, the listeners. Please, if you enjoy the show, leave us a review on iTunes or your platform of choice, comment on our Facebook threads, or even better, support us on Patreon. We love turning that kind of support back into the community.
This is Season 12 of the White Book Podcast. Props and Slops, episode number 473 of the podcast formerly known as The White Book. Still kind of.
473 is completely insane. Will has done 473 episodes, which means, yeah, this episode predates both of our marriages, probably combined.
Oh, yeah. Oh, like crap, it does.
I'm at a bit over half of that, I think, but not much, because, you know, I quit Thrones a couple times, and I was every other week a couple times, even though my every other week was really every weekend. We were just lying.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, episode span is, yeah, probably in the range of half-ish, but, like, total time devoted, or, sorry, episode is probably a little less than half, but total time, like, devoted to the show is probably... over.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to do hours, but like, assuming that it's 2 hours an episode, there have been like years of our lives spent on this.
Yeah. Yeah, it is a lot, and 2 hours an episode is probably a generous guess.
Yeah, I mean, given the like start. Yeah. Yep. Wow. So 2 hours an episode, let's say 800 hours. What's 800 divided by 24?
I'm far too lazy to do that properly.
It's okay. I'm on a calculator.
Good man.
About 33 days of podcasting.
So
over a month of your life has been spent doing
this. Yeah. Over a month. I mean, well, that's just like since you've joined, weren't you ballparking that?
No, I just did 400 as a ballpark figure. So like, yeah, so you've done probably more like 40 or 50 days.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
no, that's just recording time. You're not counting editing time, man.
Oh, you don't edit anymore.
Double that.
You
okay,
don't
edit. I edit much less than I used to, I definitely admit, but it's still not just to throw raw audio up on the internet.
I would never be on a podcast that just throws raw audio up on the internet. I have definitely not founded and participated in a dead podcast that did just that.
Nope.
All right. So... I bet you the variants of us made better decisions with their time and didn't spend this much time podcasting.
Yeah, yeah. Man, that's trippy. What do you think? Do you think we're like the mid-range? Are there also variants that have blown like a year of their life in like hours on podcasting? Are we somewhere in the middle, or do you think we're the extreme end?
I mean, my guess is Gator Will is somewhere mocking us right now.
Fact. Man, I love the thought of Gator Will right now. I'm glad you...
Gator Will is just sitting there grumpy, like, what is alternate me doing?
That might officially be the best thing to come out of Loki, so thank you for that.
So, comic nerd hat quickly. That was definitely a Immortus, not Kang, if we're going to tie it to a comic character.
It was like 90% Immortus and like 10% the actual He Who Remains, which I'm fine with.
Yeah.
Plus, I get to feel vindicated about my guess on who would be behind the curtain. So
I thought it was Kang. I didn't say it on air because I looked it up stupidly. I looked up who, whatever her name is, the head of the TSA.
Oh, Ramona. Judge Renslayer?
Yeah, Judge Renslayer. I looked up who that was in the comics.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
just a, it's she, a,
she's Kang's
a,
lover.
Right? Yeah, she's sort of, she's a Kang supporting character. And I was like, oh, well, they're not just randomly throwing that name and it's Kang. Right. So like, yeah.
Totally. I mean, and she went off to go find like the person behind the person or whatever, like all the way at the end. So obviously she's going to go off and find like Prime Kang or whatever we're going to wind up wanting to call him.
It would not entirely shock me if she were an alternate Kang.
Oh, if she was herself? Well, that probably doesn't work out real well.
The principal thing?
Yes, yeah. Because that appeared to be in roughly the current era, give or take. Mm-hmm. And both his comic history and what He Who Remains said is like the 31st century, so.
Yeah, time shenanigans and lies and genetics. Maybe a genetic ancestor, that kind of thing.
That could work. That would be weird for me because I'm so used to thinking of Kang as a descendant of Reed Richards. So I don't tend to think about there being other important people in his lineage. There were,
traditionally. I don't remember who off the top of my head, but yeah, there definitely were.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's also the year 3000 gives time for lots of ancestors, right?
Exactly.
Either way, we now have the introduction to the mutants and the Fantastic Four all set with the end of Loki, which is nice.
We now have the introduction of literally anything at yeah. this point.
I mean, almost like the next series is What If.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, I'd been thinking for when What If was first announced and all that, oh, you know, it's just this neat little animated side story, but now I'm wondering, I haven't really seen specific word, but like, is this animated one or animated show rather supposed to be part of
yes.
like our yes. MCU proper, so to speak?
Absolutely. Yes. That's what it is. That's why it's an MCU show. Loki said it would be a launching off point for several movies and such too. Whatever his real name is. But yeah, so it's happening.
Okay.
Like we are, that is part of the canon, and we will soon get mutants, soon get Fantastic Four. And as we reunite things, I would assume, and like this is obviously a guess, that the eventual like solution to the multiverse, they'll pull yeah. things back together into at least a reasonable number so it's not infinite, so yeah. they can pretend something
they'll
matters.
They'll kind of Secret War / New 52 it.
Yeah, they'll say there's one, and then there'll be two, and then that'll be the secret. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
That'll be yeah. the thing.
And that's how we'll suddenly get mutants and right. Miles Morales and whoever else they decide to throw in. They're like, yeah, we'll smush them together and keep these parts, and
yeah,
there we go.
My guess, and yeah, that gives us Young Avengers as like the galaxy hopping team, whatever. Either way.
Whoa, no, if we're getting galaxy hop, sorry, well, okay, fine. Young Avengers can be a galaxy hopping team. That's fine. But if we get a multiverse hopping team and it's not the Exiles, I'm going
to
mutiny.
Well, get ready to mutiny. No one cares about the Exiles.
What?
No one cares about the Exiles. Marvel doesn't care about the Exiles.
I love the Exiles.
I like
Blink, the Exiles. One of my favorite characters. Morph?
Yeah, I adore it.
Not one of my favorite characters.
Mimic, you just like it.
One of my favorites.
So you just like Age of Apocalypse. Got it.
I mean, you're not wrong.
Just name the Age of Apocalypse characters. I really like them. Sabretooth too? Yeah, got it.
No Wild Child, though.
I like Age of Apocalypse Wild Child. Fine. I don't need 616 Wild Child.
I mean, he's
whatever.
Not as cool as Age of Apocalypse Sabretooth, though.
No. Not close. But he's a good side character for him and helps humanize the character. I'm assuming Reed Richards is the solution to this.
Probably, yeah. I mean, I think isn't Fantastic Four supposed to be the like capstone Phase 4 film?
I don't know. Do they solve it in phase four, though? Or do they... Because it usually takes two phases to solve anything.
Well, I mean, it took us three to solve Thanos, yeah, basically. Yeah. But I'm pretty sure Viggy said they're not going to do anything quite that long for a payoff. So I'm kind of assuming one big villain per phase for the next couple phases.
I would assume it's still two, because we still have to get X-Men in, and X-Men are not this phase.
Yeah. I mean, I guess if they want to do them pre whatever kind of mending they work out.
Yeah, because they have to be part of whatever the solution is, right? Because they're not going to be like, look, X-Men, bye.
Yeah. I mean, maybe they won't. I mean, look at how Loki descended. They were like, hey, look, Kang's running the TVA. Bye.
Yeah, but then they were like season two. They're not like, and it's gone forever.
Yeah, like, I suppose. It's the first one of these shows we've gotten that season two tagline at the end. So
yeah, well, hopefully it's the only one that gets a season two, because Vision and Scarlet Witch seem to wrap up as the story, as that concept. And Falcon Winter Soldier sucked, so I don't want any more of that.
I liked that show, but let's be real. Falcon and Winter Soldier should not exist for a second season. At the very least, it needs to be Captain America and Winter Soldier.
Yeah, I mean, maybe. I just assume we're getting another Captain America movie at that point, right?
I assume we are. Yeah, they're not going to only keep him on TV screens.
Right. We've got to set up the new Avengers and the new, what sure seems to be, Thunderbolts. Did we talk about Black Widow yet?
Oh, we have not. Okay. Yeah. Okay, so how did I miss putting that on here?
All right. So let's come back to that in a minute. Let's actually talk about Loki itself.
Let's finish Loki.
instead of just the repercussions.
We've been dancing around one thing in regards to Loki, and that is He Who Remains. And honestly,
you said it. That's how we started.
Well, right. But we didn't. There's more to it here. Because part of it also, I think, it is about the like pacing of this season and this episode in particular. It really shifted, I felt, away from a lot of the standard Marvel movie kind of formula for this last act. Yeah, I mean, we got a hint of that with the Vision v Vision thing in WandaVision.
And the big witch fight.
Yeah, but we still got the huge set piece fight. I mean, and even the two Visions had their set piece fight. And we got a fight in this episode, but that really was not the focus here in the same way, I felt. And I kind of liked it. It took me a sec to get used to this different, slower, kind of ethical problem sort of finale, but I really liked it. Plus, what is it? Is it Jonathan Majors?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah. Majors is his last name. I remember that much, at least. He freaking killed it. Like,
oh, he was incredible.
For the first minute or two of his performance, it kind of rubbed me the wrong way. And I was like, oh, what are they doing? But very quickly, it totally like enraptured me watching him. And this like delicate balance, wobbly balance between this kind of like tired old man, seen it all, guardian sort of figure, and the just like, I've completely lost it mentally figure. It was fascinating, and his performance was riveting. I loved it.
I completely agree. I thought it was basically pitch perfect, and I look forward to seeing him in a much more villainous role in the future, because that's obviously where this goes.
We're going to see him in several different versions.
He's officially in Ant-Man and Wasp.
Yeah, but which version of him? Kang proper or somebody else?
I think we're just getting Kang proper.
I don't know.
My guess is we're getting Kang proper.
My guess is they're gonna lean into the multiverse thing rather than the personal timeline thing, right? Because in the comics, Kang and Ramatut and Immortus and half a dozen other things are all him at like different moments in his own life, like, and it's one person.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they're going to lean into the multiverse.
So they're one person, but they're also not one person, because Kang is both Immortus and Iron Lad, but also not Immortus and Iron Lad. It's the time travel.
It's complicated time travel stuff. But I think they'll go harder in the multiverse stuff, and that we will see multiple different multiversal Kangs. Like we will see Kang Prime, we'll see a Ramatut, we'll see a Crud. What's the one where he's from, like, the, I don't know, 25th century or something, and he's like a CEO. Yeah. He runs like Stark Tower and stuff.
But how this works out, I think, is they do that for a little bit, and then they seemingly turn back to Immortus to fix things. And it turns out Immortus is actually Kang Prime, proper.
I could dig that.
And that would that's just the simplest way to like get one big villain for the rest of this.
Yeah.
And then, like, that would make sense as a set end to Fantastic Four, right? Either way, I'm very satisfied. I think this is, regardless of what it set up for the future, it in and of itself is the strongest Marvel property, the strongest thing Marvel's put out since Infinity War.
Than Endgame, you think?
I think it's about on par with Endgame. I think Infinity War was a much, much better movie than Endgame. I thought Endgame was excellent, but Endgame was Endgame was good at being a tour of the Marvel universe in an ending, but not good necessarily in and of in a story as, in as and a of itself. Alone. Right.
Yeah. I mean, whereas it was like Infinity War Part 2.
Right, if it ends after Infinity War, Thanos wins, we go on with life. Like, that's just fine, right? Like, no one's happy with it, right? Like, it's not like that's a happy ending, but it's a complete story. Yeah, whereas, like, Endgame, which I loved, I don't think I like Endgame as much as Loki, like, as a standalone thing. As a culmination of yada yada of 20 years, sure, it's wonderful. But, like, so is Infinity War.
I think I like Endgame better than Loki, but I will hands down say that Loki is the best thing they've put out in Phase 4.
Yeah, well, isn't that, like, two things?
It's four things now.
The other TV show, Widow, Far From Home? Or is Far From Home the end of Phase 3?
Far From Home was the end of Phase 3.
Well, so, definitely
WandaVision, anyway. Falcon Winter Soldier, Loki, Black Widow.
It's better than those. It's definitely, like, okay, how about this? It's the best non-crossover thing they've done in memory. Like, what's the last standalone movie as good as this memory? To me? Is probably either Soldier.
I was going to say, does Winter Soldier count as a crossover? It gets a little fuzzy with some of this. So, or Ragnarok? I mean,
I think it's better. I liked it better. I don't. Obviously, I'm real
massive
low on
tonal difference, but man, I'm real low on Ragnarok. I rewatch Ragnarok a lot.
So I'm lower on Ragnarok than most for entirely geeky reasons. I recognize it's great. It's just I really, 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 really like the Simonson run of Thor, mm-hmm. and like. Just being like, we're just going to do it as a joke made me a little sad. And like, I get that it was really good. It just wasn't for me because it wasn't what I wanted from that particular movie, which is fine. And like, I'm glad everyone loved it. It's just, I didn't like it as much. I liked it as much the first time, but rewatching it has mostly made me sad.
Well, that's a bummer.
So yeah, I think whatever came, because I count Guardians as a solo movie, even though that's it. You know what I mean? Like, it's not a crossover between
Star-Lord and Gamora. Oh, yeah, yeah, no. I wouldn't call it a crossover. It is an ensemble, but I wouldn't call it a crossover.
Yeah, I think that's a reasonable way to categorize Winter Soldier.
Yeah. I wasn't sure which direction you would go with categorizing it, since Black Widow was introduced elsewhere and then came into that film, so.
Yeah. I'm also lower on Civil War than most.
Oh, Civil War is definitely in my top quarter. I'm not sure of the exact standing, but I liked it a lot.
I enjoyed it. I thought it was fun. I enjoyed Zemo much more in Falcon and Winter Soldier. I think it's the only thing I really liked about Falcon and Winter Soldier. I thought they did a poor job with Zemo. And I thought making Tony Stark a complete moron for much of the movie was a bold choice.
Oh, I thought that was just how things named Civil War worked.
Maybe, but like the end when it's like, I don't understand that you are brainwashed, I must try and kill you, was so dumb. It was just so dumb.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, it was, yeah. I mean, I get that, like, it just felt like it was the narrative needed them to be enemies, but needed us to not hate Bucky, and they couldn't get us all the way there.
Hmm.
I don't know. Everyone else apparently disagrees, right? And, like, it's got, I mean, one of my top five fights ever. It's just everything that wasn't one of those fights I thought was reasonably contrived.
Okay. Well, what about, I know I'm not doing this as smoothly as possible, but what about pulling us back to Loki? Is there more on Loki itself that we ought to cover?
No, I mean, Sylvie will be back, right? Like, I think
I hope so. I think freaking loved her.
She just waits till season two.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And that they don't utilize her in a film. Yeah. Yeah.
That's, well, because we, because likely we know Loki is in Doctor Strange.
Do we know it, or is it just like a pretty strong rumor?
No, I mean, it's a very strong, it's a very, very strong rumor. I believe it was the casting news from one of the reputable sites.
Okay.
So I'm just going to assume that, like, the reputable sites are going to remain reputable, and yeah, he's there. It also makes a lot of sense for him to explain what the hell is going on, right?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, speaking of explaining what's going on, I did see a nice note that in the mid-credit scene in WandaVision, mm-hmm, that when Wanda heard the kids' voices, that was very possibly the moment that the multiverse began to exist again.
That makes a lot of sense.
That, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, I could live with that. I do not love, I just want them to be careful when they figure that out. I don't have much reason not to believe they will be, but I would really like them to be careful as they figure out how to bring the kids back.
Yeah, yeah. We don't want that to be too cheap, or yeah, worse yet, done in a kind of horrific manner, like, you know, all of, man, I just want to call it Pleasantville. What was the town actually called?
Pleasantville, yes.
Yeah, whatever it was. Yeah, like, I just don't want Wanda to make that sort of, like, poor and self-serving move that again.
Yeah, you could see that.
Unless they just want to set her up as a big bad.
I don't think so. Seems like a bad idea. Hopefully they just keep her separate from Magneto. I think it's too late to do that.
Oh, agreed. Yeah, I think that ship has sailed.
But besides that, I loved Loki, like, genuinely loved Loki.
That was good. And the music in this was so good.
Everything. There was one weak episode in six. But that episode did so much emotional heavy lifting. Even if it didn't work for me, it worked well enough to explain the tie between Loki and Sylvie that I was fine.
Okay. I was wondering when you started to say one weak episode, which one you meant. So the Lamentous episode with the doomed planet.
Yeah. Cause it's just the doomed planet was clearly doomed and was there for character work.
Yeah.
So, like, I was into the character work, but there was a lot of running from people with guns and shit. It's like, I don't care. Doom planet, you're not getting killed here, just hurry up.
Yeah, it was a lot of what was happening, like, plot wise felt really disconnected from everything else. Really only the character connections mattered at all, so just a little clunky that they couldn't find a plot way to do that, and they had to come up with, like, a random C plot in the middle of a six episode season.
Yeah. I think it was effective. I think it was still not good. It's my only, literally, I think the only thing I didn't like about the season.
Yeah.
I especially really like the end. I'm curious if we ever see, the versions of Mobius we know again, or any of that, or if, excuse me.
Yeah. Yeah. Is that a rewritten,
that version is TVA, gone forever,
or are there multiple TVAs now?
Yeah. Yeah. Or like, yeah, who was he originally? Where does this go? I think is going to be very, very interesting.
Plus, we missed a huge moment when he was there with B-15 staring at the screen at the end, watching the multiverse, you know, blossom or whatever. Like, mm-hmm. That was the moment for the wow. And we didn't get it. And it really, really saddened me.
I'm still okay. It does not matter to me. I'm not a big Owen Wilson fan in most movies.
I'm not a like huge Owen Wilson fan, but like something about the fact that it's become meme worthy, like his performance of that particular like phrase that just like now I need to see it and I didn't realize it beforehand.
Yeah, well, that one is not for me.
So we're propping Loki all around. Is it time to move on to the other Marvel property?
So yeah, I want to preface Black Widow. I really, really, really enjoyed it. I thought it was very strong. I'm obviously not thrilled about when it came out in the Marvel timeline, but they used to have a racist dude in charge, right? Or racist/sexist/shit dude in charge.
Yeah.
So now having someone like with sense in charge, they made it when they could. I get it. Florence Pugh is amazing. Fine. Great. Wonderful.
She was the best part of that movie. I hard prop her. The rest of the movie, I only give maybe a soft prop to, but I give a hard prop to Florence.
So I think there are two, what the past, I guess, year-ish has really like hammered home is there's two types of MCU fans and they exist on a spectrum. There's people that think all the small character stuff is kind of a waste and they're only here for the big like continuity and explosions. Mm. That group hates Black Widow. They hated the end of Scarlet Witch because it didn't tie into enough stuff. They were very upset that like their big grand theories weren't pushed forward by this film.
Ah, the Mephisto crew, you might say.
Yeah, and then there's the group that likes the smaller stories that thinks like the way the characters work and their own personal journeys are worth investing in. And like, that's the real sales pitch. I'm pretty firmly the latter. And I thought if this didn't add a lot to Black Widow, I thought it helped us understand her reasonably.
Yeah. It helped with her a good bit. I mean, I would say I lean closer to that end of the scale, and one of the high points for me in particular in the film was the like sisterly interplay between Natasha and Yelena, and it really felt very sibling-y, if I can phrase.
They're both phenomenal actresses, so that helps.
Yeah, they sold it, and there were even like there were a lot of little details that I really liked that kind of helped sell that. Like, for instance, the difference in their fighting styles. I mean, sure, Yelena was giving her crap about the posing and stuff, which, you know, was kind of a funny semi-meta joke. But even just when the two of them fight in the apartment, theoretically, they should have the same repertoire from the same training in the Red Room. But they fight very differently, and it kind of really cemented for me when Yelena just like hauls off and just like body slam tackles Natasha into those cupboards. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, that is the sort of like inelegant, just angry, I'm so frustrated move mm-hmm. that Natasha would never do, but the like always second fiddle, like younger sister trying to like impress her older sister and frustrated, like that sort of thing would 100% do. And like, it sold her personality in such a little like well thought detail. I found it.
I agree. It also makes general sense because Natasha at this point has lived two Avengers movies and, you know, years of being in S.H.I.E.L.D. and so on. So her fighting, like, she should have evolved who she is and how she fights them in the meantime. I think I liked everything except Taskmaster. The Taskmaster reveal just felt kind of dumb.
The Taskmaster reveal was not great. He's a super entertaining character in the comics to start with, but I'm not like super up in arms.
Oh, I don't care if they change
about
it.
The change, other than it's kind of the Deadpool Wolverine origins problem. You take somebody who's really mouthy and then you make them silent, which like, why not just choose a different character at that point? But I think what fell flat is, I mean, okay, let's be real here. A solid three quarters of this movie was just kind of saying, hey, we heard you liked Winter Soldier, so what if we just remake that movie?
I don't think that's true.
At least 50% of it.
I don't think that's true.
There's a lot, including the silent Terminator-like unstoppable force, you know, villain who's not the main villain, who's just working for them and is brainwashed and so on, which
I mean, that's just a fairly common trope, right?
It is, but when you're redoing it in the same kind of vein of the
Vader,
the film,
right? Like,
yes.
Like it's
to
the,
some
this
extent,
is all, this is
though there was Vader. One film where Vader was the villain.
But even then, he was clearly a subordinate, so there was not one film where he was the villain.
He was
a subordinate.
But regardless, the thing I'm getting to, though, also still works with Vader in the reveal about who is under that faceless, you know, brainwashed persona is impactful and has like a real clear resonance to the main character, right? With obviously Steve and Bucky, and we got to see the implications of that play out and how it changed Steve's behavior and so on. And there just wasn't that emotional weight and punch. And there was no real actual fallout or repercussion to it. No change really to Nat's behavior. It felt flat. Very flat.
I mean, I get that she felt guilty about the collateral damage because she had to kill a little girl to be free and she didn't actually kill a little girl. And I get the like family tie and that she's learning to be a different, like, I get all of that. Just don't care enough about it. It didn't land. Like, she clearly killed tons of people when she was conditioned, right? Like, I get that she was a little extra sad about this, but I didn't care. I had no sympathy for the villain already. The villain's basically a monster. Like, so it's not like, oh my God, he would do this to his own daughter. It's like, oh yeah, of course he would do this to his own. Like, right. It was just, there was nothing there. Like, I think that is literally, though, the only thing about the movie that didn't work for me.
The Red Room being in this giant flying space station thing. Didn't work real well for me, and also was another Winter Soldier beat.
But you're playing a JRPG. It's fine.
I mean,
you got to go to the floating island. I was like, oh, cool. Final Fantasy VI.
Now that we're going to move the statues. I am never going to unsee that.
I swear
to God. It's so true.
As it's happening, I was like, oh, cool. Final Fantasy VI. Let's do it. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just, it's what we're doing. If that's where we're going. Like, it's every JRPG, but like, I mean, it's every JRPG series, whatever. But like Final Fantasy VI is the first time I personally saw it. So whenever I see it in something else, I'm like, oh, cool. So we're doing the floating island thing. Cool. Let's on with it. I know this story beat. You will almost crash into Earth and we will have to escape and this will be a big thing. That's a story beat like my personal taste make me very comfortable with. I would watch a full movie of Natasha just ditching General Ross.
Yeah, that was super awkward and weird.
Wait, really? I loved it.
We don't know how to solve this problem. Guess what? It's 2 weeks later, like, writing shortcut.
Oh, I didn't give a shit. No, of course she can get away from Ross. Ross is compared to her incompetent. That was what the beginning was setting up.
I mean, of course she could, but the way it was done was super obvious. Well, the writers don't know what to do here.
Of course they do. They could have done it 1,000 ways. It's not hard to write a basic escape scene from a bunch of cops. She could have waited to get back and broken out of jail. She could have broken out 1,000 times. That's not like... That's not her trade. That's just you don't have time, and it doesn't matter.
Not her trademark. Is that what you started to say?
It's just it's so easy that like she can get away. Like I don't I mean, we don't need to see it. It's not part of the plot. We don't. No, we don't want, really see how see the first.
I want yes, to see her well, escape I, stuff because this wasn't a spy movie. I wanted a spy movie. She barely did anything spy-y in the whole
thing. No, I mean, I don't like, know
I was
why,
talking about this with some I don't other.
Know why
fans,
you expected a
and
spy movie
in the course of all of the MCU? Probably the most spy-y type of scenes from Nat are. In Avengers 1, her intro scene and her getting the info out of Loki, and like to a much lesser extent, some of Winter Soldier. But like, this was really just a lot of big over the top action that honestly kind of lost me, even in that like early fight scene when she falls four stories hitting mm-hmm. stuff every stop on the way down. And I'm like, she's not. A Titan or an Asgardian or something, like she should be at a minimum have many broken bones, let alone possibly be dead.
So we're at a point where I'm very, very, very mildly tuned in for Marvel action. Like I saw that and I went, yep, Marvel action. Like well, it's just
that felt
all...
even over the top. To me, for Marvel action, like
oh man,
you whatever I can buy her being slammed into walls and stuff, like in the apartment fight. But there is a point where it's just like, you've pushed that too far for someone you've told me doesn't have superpowers. If you told me she had superpowers, okay, I'll run with it. But like, if you make one of her things be that she's a normal human comparatively, then like, I don't know.
Yeah, I just don't care anymore. Like Marvel has spent. I can't think of any specific scenes, but Marvel has spent an absurd amount of time with everyone from Star-Lord to, like, Fal- like, everyone just gets, does completely dumb crap in all these fights, and I don't care. Like, enjoy, have fun, I don't, I, they're eye candy that I barely even pay attention to, like, and I get that that's a big part of the movie, but, like, I, it's just, there have been 20X of these things, right, 24, whatever the number is, like, I just, the action scenes, except like I still enjoy the big group action scenes, like the I really like the big Avengers
fights
yeah
stuff like that,
like those are still fun because they've only been done four or five times, right? But like the 3 to 5 we get in every movie are like just don't exist for me. Like they're just they're not even like they get no thought. It's just Okay. Like, I'm mostly thinking about what story beats are trying to be accomplished by the fight. Like, is this the fight at the beginning where we're going to lose so that we can set up this? Is where are we here? Like, the Taskmaster at the beginning had to kick Natasha's ass, right? Like, Natasha can't win the fight. She had to set up the Taskmaster. And I'm like, all right, cool. So this is this fight. So now we're going to go to this fight. We have the beginning fight to just set up the, like, establish the early action. Like, it's just, it's all that shit. And it's fine.
Now you got me thinking about that early fight and another one of my sadnesses about Taskmaster in that the like copied abilities essentially don't matter. Like they're kind of a throwaway reference from like one of the villains. Like the heroes don't notice or care. And like, it's just, but I don't Taskmaster know. It felt really kind of wasted.
So multiverse, if they wanted to Taskmaster, they'll just write one in if someone has any interest in writing one.
Yeah, I mean, since it's all tech based currently in the MCU, they could even have somebody else like steal the suit or something, and suddenly Taskmaster 2 shows up. Who could that be? And you know, have that whole mystery and have it be Tony and so on, right? Tony's his first name.
Yes, I think so. Whatever. Yeah, him. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it was as strong as most Marvel solo movies. It was slightly more memorable than many because Florence Pugh was better than functionally, like, less performance as good as hers in a solo movie. Yikes. Like,
let's also throw in David Harbour was great, too.
Sure, but not, like, she... Stole ever. He was great. Like her acting made him seem just serious enough, right?
Yeah.
Because he was pure comic relief. He didn't really dip into it. But, like, she made him seem serious enough to be taken serious. She was, like,
she's the first,
unbelievably impressed.
Yeah. She is the first of the, like, new batch of kind of replacement Avengers and torch passing and whatever that we've been introduced to lately. She's the first one I'm actually actively excited to see more about.
I mean, I will pay for her movie, TV show, whatever the next... I mean, look, I pay for all the Marvel shit anyway. But even if I was lukewarm on Marvel, like, whatever project she does, I'm interested in. I also adored Little Women. But
I still haven't watched that.
It's so good. It's free on Prime, I believe, so you should really get to it. It was Prime or Hulu, but it was free on one of them.
Okay, I've got both of those, so...
Genuinely freaking phenomenal. Like, I've watched other adaptations at this point, and, like, none of them hold a candle to it. And it's largely, they play with time a little bit, and it really adds to the narrative. It makes everything work much better. And, just, they hire phenomenal actresses, and hiring phenomenal actresses really, really helps. But, yes, I'm a fan. I will spend all the money to support her. I look forward to her just being Black Widow. Yeah, I got nothing beyond that. I'm in for her, and I think she made the movie, and the movie was quite good, even if it was largely quite good because they hired a really, really great actress who hit it out of the park.
Yeah. But like I said, I give it a soft prop. I think there are some weak parts that are easy to hammer on, but like while I was watching it, I really enjoyed it, and there were a few standout things that really, really stood out well, as we saw.
So I think the mid-tier solo movies, you're not Winter Soldiers or Iron Man, I guess, well, basically, or I guess even sort of the first Spidey. Like, they all fall into the same basic category. This is in the same category as Doctor Strange and Captain Marvel.
I was going to say,
the first Ant-Man movie.
Straight-up comparison that everybody is going to make or want others to make is going to be to Captain Marvel. And while that film was fun, I do think that Black Widow was much better.
Yeah, I think it was better. I think they're all in the same, like, if we're doing a tier list, they're like probably tier like 3-ish movies, right? Like, tier 1 would be the giant crazy crossover stuff. Tier 2 would be like the really like the classic stuff, like
middle films.
The like complete classics, right? Like the ones that do something important and big, and like the ones that everyone always talks about immediately. Your Guardians 1. And then there's the like shit tier, right? Like Thor, Guardians 2, Thor Dark World, Iron Man 2 and 3, if we're being completely, you know what I mean? Like, there's that tier. So like, if we're breaking into 4 tiers, I think it's firmly like toward the top of tier 3. And I think that's a good, like, I did not expect a tier. It was not going to be a giant tier 1. We Shattered the Universe movie, right?
Oh, and like, sure. We knew it was just going to be a send off film, right?
Yeah. And we knew it wasn't going to be tier 2 because they killed the character off. Right. Yeah. So like, they weren't going to do anything cute. So like, it was like, I knew it was going to be a tier 3 movie. I was just hoping for a good tier 3 movie. That's what I got. That's a problem.
Okay.
You know what's better than Black Widow, though?
Do tell.
Never Have I Ever.
That show is great. I did finally start it now. We're only like 3 episodes in, but we did
start season 2. We're 7 or 8 in. I think it is. So, for those of you who haven't heard of it, it's an Indian teenage girl in whatever generic small American town.
Generic Californian town, anyway.
Californian town, right. who's super problematic. She just makes constant bad decisions, cheats on people.
She's a teenager.
Mean, yeah, has anger issues. She's the twist being in season 1, at the very beginning of season 1, her dad died. So, like, it offers us an easy way to understand her, even as we, like, go, oh, come on, be better. Right. But also, it's narrated by John McEnroe.
Which is inspired, I think.
So, in season 1, Andy Samberg narrates an episode. And it's great. Yeah, because I had 2. And then I went back and watched that one because in season two, I don't think you're there yet. Someone else is going to narrate a character's episode. Oh. And it is thus far like my favorite episode of the season. And the second that episode started, I was like, this is going to suck. Because it's not, it was not a thing I thought I would care about. And it was just so well done. Like the show was consistently funny. And I'm someone who doesn't usually like shows that if I don't like the protagonist, or like I think the protagonist is a shitty person, that'll like just turn me off a show and I'll move on. Like, whereas like The Boys or whatever, it's like, look, they're all terrible. And like, I don't want to watch a bunch of shitty people. I live in the real world. I know plenty of shitty people.
Yeah. But I mean, she's like real world shitty though. Like, right. She's just a self-absorbed teenager. So there's a lot to identify with, I think. And if you've ever been a teenager.
Yeah, it's not that she's real world shitty. It's that she's like, everything is really well motivated. Like, she's not shitty for shitty's sake, right? Like, yeah. It's all very well put together and very smart. And like, she's a sympathetic character while also being often the antagonist of her own story, which again, people often are, right? Like, she's one of my favorite characters in teen fiction, probably. Like,
she's fun.
I mean,
you know, thinking about favorite teen characters like that, you know who I really like on this show? He was in the background doing something on the most recent episode that we watched, that character being Trey. And I said something.
Is he the stoner kid?
Yeah, the stoner kid.
He's great. He's in, he plays basically the same character in the last couple seasons of Superstore.
Oh, nice. I still need to watch that too. But yeah, he was like, what was going on? The guys were like in the background of a scene. I think he was doing like a handstand.
Yeah.
While other dudes threw bottles of water at his junk.
Mm-hmm.
And I laughed, number one. And then I turned to Kristen and I was like, this show is kind of amazing. Like, I sort of want to know who's in the writer room because I've watched so many, you know, teen dramas and different things. Like, If Only Roy Was Here to talk about Riverdale at the moment. Oh, you did? Okay. Well, you'll get where this is going then. Is just as far as like where the characters in so much of like popular media in these teen shows don't act like teens. But I saw that happen in that episode and I was like, that is exactly what dumb teenage guys do. Like, exactly. I want to know who was smart enough to capture that accurately.
I mean, so the show is executive produced and written by Mindy Kaling.
Yeah.
Lang Fisher apparently is the other major writer producer and is responsible for both that, The Mindy Project, and Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Oh,
or at least partially responsible for Brooklyn Nine. And that is, it is very similar to Brooklyn Nine-Nine humor. I'm just literally clicking through writers at this point and seeing what else they were credited for.
Okay.
Exactly. Very heavy woman cast, which is awesome.
Or the writer's room, you mean?
Okay. Yeah, writer's room, sorry.
I mean, the cast is very heavily female as well. There's effectively, like, three living guys that matter.
Yeah.
Paxton Hall Yoshida, the nerdy, jerky kid I can't remember the name of, and, Trey, I guess.
we get a couple more that matter slightly.
Saying this as a complaint if anybody happens.
Sorry, I'm literally looking through the writing team. No one who did anything I'm crazy about still. I did not like Mr. Mayor. One of the writers for Mr. Mayor is here. Apparently, maybe I should watch New Saved by the Bell because a lot of the same people seem to work on the 2020 Saved by the Bell.
Oh, really?
Huh. Yeah. Which means
maybe I should give that a whirl too.
And a fair amount of Mythic Quest writers. I've heard good things about Mythic Quest, but what's Mythic Quest on?
I have no idea.
I used to know what Mythic Quest was on. It might be if it's Peacock, I'll watch it. If it's Apple TV, it's on its own. Mythic Quest is Apple TV. Nope, sorry, Mythic Quest. one or two Apple TV shows I would like to watch that I will not, because seriously, enough is enough.
Yeah.
Yeah. Either way, Never Have I Ever gets A, I love sitcoms. B, I'm usually much higher on workplace sitcoms than school sitcoms. I'm very hard on school-based anything.
That makes sense.
Yeah, well, it's why I don't like Riverdale. Like,
Did you like Schooled?
I did not see Schooled.
Oh, do you like the Goldbergs?
I didn't see the Goldbergs.
What? Oh my goodness. The Goldbergs is my favorite sitcom right now.
Well, I will try it when you try Superstore.
Okay, deal.
So just tell me when. Like, you, it's not like we're not in eight group chats. Pick one.
That's true.
Send me out and say, I'm going to start Superstore and I will start Goldbergs that day. Cool. Although not for the next 2 days. I'm going drinking. That's why I can't podcast. It's where Roy is. Roy was like, can we do tomorrow or Thursday? I was like, I gotta go get drunk. Sorry. But I don't know. Neither here nor there. Yeah. Generally speaking, like, I hated Riverdale. I hated Sabrina. I've hated 80% of shows that have teenagers because I spend too much time with teenagers for them to sound wrong. And they sound like pitch perfect to Never Have Ever. It's really inspired getting older people to narrate them, because it gives you the narrative device to do the thing that old people want to do when they're telling stories about kids and be like, you know, that's stupid. And like, you can't have kids do that, right? But John McEnroe can be like, you idiot.
and he does. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Straight up is like, that was a bad idea.
Yeah. I agree. Yeah, super high props.
Yep. It's agreed.
Easily the best sitcom that I know of running currently. I also don't like any other sitcom currently running that I've seen. So, not hard, but like, it's on par with Superstore. It's about as good as Superstore, which was one of my favorite shows.
Okay. I've been meaning to watch it forever, so...
It's excellent.
We'll get it in soon.
In my head, I have it classified as The Office, but not obnoxious.
Okay, good. Yeah, because I had trouble getting into The Office.
Yeah, I mean, once I got into The Office, I really liked it, but it's not in my top tier of sitcoms. Like, Michael Scott's humor doesn't do anything for me. Oh, shit, that was supposed to be on the list, too. Hey, I'm going to slap Rutherford Falls.
Oh, really? Did you finish watching it?
No, I got like three or four episodes in.
Yeah, I think I got three episodes in, and it never hooked me.
So, I don't need, I forget his name in real life.
Ed Helms
playing Steve Carell.
Yeah.
Like, he's just Steve Carell in it. And like, I don't ever need to, no offense to Steve Carell, but, I don't need to see anything he's done if he's just going to play that same role ever again. Like, I don't need 18 versions of Michael Scott in my life.
Yeah.
Like, the only thing I've liked him in that I know, and like, I know he's done a lot of things, probably many I haven't seen, so this isn't meant to be comprehensive, is that movie with Ryan Gosling.
I do not know what movie the two of them were in.
It's on Netflix and it's excellent. Give me a second. Crazy Stupid Love. It's from 2011, so it's not fucking new or anything.
Okay. I've heard the name at least, but
yeah, it's on Netflix. It's excellent. It's a very, very funny. You would like it, and Grissom would like it. So you spend the 2 hours at some point. The Crazy Stupid Love is excellent, and he does not play. I mean, even then, he can't help but play a little bit of Michael Scott, but like, it's so toned down, and I just really, 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 really don't need Michael Scott anymore in things. And like, I don't need Steve Carell playing Michael Scott, and he's perfect at it, right? I sure as hell don't need Ed Helms being like, you know, I was in a TV show with this guy once. Let's play him in a different thing.
Yeah. You know, I wound up replacing him in a different TV show.
Yeah. I mean, it's also why I couldn't get into Space Force. He was just too Michael Scott. Like, it's just, I don't want Michael Scott in different settings. That's not like a thing. That's not a genre for me. It's why season one of Parks and Rec is so bad, because season one cast Leslie Knope is like, look, it's Michael Scott, but it's
but it's Amy Poehler, and it's like, wow, that's not a thing I enjoy.
Yeah, I don't think she was quite that bad, but yeah, no, season but one was, is definitely weaker.
It's the same gist, right? It's the same idea. So I don't need that crap. I don't need it at all. And I was really excited for it. This will be the first thing put out by Michael Schur that I did not enjoy.
Okay.
Let's add that here so we don't accidentally talk about it again.
Good call.
Last thing I got. Space Jam.
I've not watched it, but I've heard pretty much universally bad things. Is that true?
Noah liked it.
You didn't say what you thought.
I mean, it's absolutely atrocious. It's basically Corporate Synergy, the movie. If you will get a kick out of looking in the audience and seeing a White Walker and Voldemort rooting for the bad guys.
Wait, like, legit?
It's Warner Brothers, yeah. It's all Warner Brothers.
Oh, gosh.
So, like, they fly by Harry Potter World and you get the song and, like, it's Corporate Synergy, the movie. So, like, there's cute moments, but, like, yeah. It's no good. But again, Noah liked it. So, like, I didn't watch it alone, right? Like, I wasn't planning on just watching it. So, Noah enjoyed it. If you have a, I would assume, 8 or younger child, it's mm-hmm. worth watching. And if not, please don't do that to yourself. Like, it has nothing to speak for. Like, the Looney Tunes aren't even good.
Like, in general, or
oh, no, I think
Looney Tunes in this movie?
Looney Tunes in this movie. Looney Tunes in general are the funniest thing ever put down, right? Like, they're basically perfection when they were landing 50 years ago. But, I mean, they haven't... Whoever's been writing them lately has no heat on their fastball.
Yeah. Well, I will probably pass on watching it then, unless Kristen gets it in her to want
adopts
to...
a child.
Well, I was gonna say to want to watch it at some point. She,
I mean, just
the old crazy... one is one of her favorites.
Just so. Just Crazy Stupid Love.
Okay,
and be like, hey, would you rather watch Ryan Gosling with no shirt sometimes?
Answer might be a yes.
Yeah, there you go. Then, I mean, I would assume that would be her answer because he is a very handsome man. I got my wife a mug with his face on it.
Nice.
Yeah, years and years ago at this point. But yeah, it's just, it's a much better experience. Space Jam's bad. It's just bad. It's like there's literally, like, I don't have a nice thing to say about it.
Dang.
Again, like, except that Noah liked it, and so it was worth the 2 hours. I tried to pay attention, and eventually, as he got more into it, because, like, as soon as it takes a while for Bugs Bunny to show up, once Bugs Bunny shows up, he is 5, and that is Bugs Bunny, and you will pay attention. I slunk sure. to the back and played on my phone so as not to rip my eyeballs out.
Well, I'm glad you made it, and I'm glad Noah liked it.
So which Young Avengers did you read?
I actually went back because I was on a Kang trip and read the first trade of the original run. Now I'm forgetting the author, but the Iron Lad one, since you guys give me grief for bringing up Iron Lad regularly.
He's terrible.
I like him. I like him. I would like him to be reintroduced somewhere and not be Kang any longer. Some other new-ish character that could...
Oh, so totally a different character.
Yeah, yeah. Well, new-ish as in I would like some of the kind of similar personality traits and stuff, but without the baggage of being attached to Kang... That is
reasonable.
Just a mess. But I had also actually forgotten that that original run was what introduced, what's her name? Kate Bishop. So that was actually pretty cool. And she was awesome pretty much from the get-go. So I liked that. I also, like, now that I'm aware of it and I'm rereading this, because it's been forever since I've read it, but now it is very obvious to see Wiccan and Hulkling, like, upfront issue one. Like, they're not saying they're a couple, but, like, they are obviously. So that was also pretty cool. Like, that flew right by me, you know, 15 years ago or whatever when this came out before. But yeah, it was a nice nostalgia trip. And I think overall it holds up. So I would prop it.
I dig that. I don't think I can read that run properly. As it came out, the original Young Avengers run was plagued, like, by incessant delays, and it really, really broke up the flow of reading. And, like, so as I was reading the second half, it's old enough at this point. I think it's almost 20 years old that I had a pull list. And, so, like, I would read it at, like, intervals in the middle of other things angrily. Be like, oh, great, this shit's out finally. So, like, I think it's a little bit ruined for me. It also came out fairly concurrently with Runaways, which was both came out more consistently and better. And, like,
the original Runaways run is really good, too.
Yeah, so, like, I believe Young Avengers and the original Runaways were the exact same time. And, Young Avengers was very hyped, but they refused to fucking print an issue. And Runaways was coming out every month and hitting it out of the park. And, like, it was really hard to get people to read a book called Runaways, but everyone wanted to talk about Young Avengers, and it really annoyed me. So, like, the original run is a little poison for me.
Okay. I mean, I have no way to naysay that offhand, so...
It's been a long time. It's just I'm not into it. Like, some things stick with you. Like, I don't know if you saw... I posted it accidentally in our magic chat. I was meant to post it in our chat. I was at the comic shop buying Noah a toy, and they had a Spider Jerusalem and an Elijah Snow. And Warren Ellis being Garbo, he gets no money from me buying from the small independent comic shop, right? The toys are made. His licensing deal is long done. And the toys are 15 years old. But,
I mean, Elijah Snow can still be an amazing character.
I think... Spider Jerusalem is still an amazing character. I think they're both excellent. But, like, they're formative, right? I don't think I could reread Transmet now. I could probably read Planetary, but I don't think I could reread Transmet now with all the filthy assistant stuff, knowing what we know about him.
There's much less of that awkward self-insert in Planetary.
Yeah, Elijah's not a creep. Like, he's like in love at some point in the past, and then I don't think has any other romantic interest in the whole run. But,
I don't think so. Yeah. I mean, at best, he's kind of a mild father figure to Chiquita.
There's nothing inappropriate in their interactions.
Oh, no, not at all. Not at all. So, at least not that I can recall now after having not read the comic for a decade. So don't crucify me for that later.
I reread it 5-ish years ago. I'm pretty sure it's not there. But yeah, reading them at the time were both important to me, much like Young Avengers reading at the time was annoying to me. So they're characters I have an extra fondness for. Whereas the original Young Avengers, I think I really, really like Wiccan and Kate Bishop, and that's kind of it. And like my affection for them largely comes from the Gillen Young Avengers run, the later, much better one.
I'm a big Cassie fan, personally, but
I'm okay with her.
Pun not intended, but I'll take it now that
she's a little generic sometimes. Like, most people don't write her as distinct. She's just chipper, innocent, nice teenage girl.
Yeah, that probably says something about me. I don't know.
I'm not commenting on that.
yeah, I've, you know, frankly, that probably... has a weirder context when I say that out loud than I actually meant it when I said it. So anyway, I was just going to say, in general, I really like teen team books, like Young Avengers and Runaways and like the old 90s Teen Titans, stuff like that. Young Justice.
You have there are 8,000 good Marvel teenager books. Mutant teenager books.
I was going to say, number one is the original New Mutants run.
The original Mutants is great. X-Force ended up being really strong for the majority of its run, but even then when they come do when New X-Men's Gen X is really good, and then when they do New X-Men,
like Gen X a lot too.
Like not the Grant Morrison New X-Men, which is my favorite X-Men run ever, but the New X-Men after the Grant Morrison New X-Men, which is actually like New X-Men, is excellent. And then there's like a first class run by some excellent writer or another where it does the original five is teenagers, which is great. Everything, almost every time Marvel has done, look, we've got a new group of mutant teenagers. It's been great.
I'm pretty much a sucker for that. Anytime they can sell me on a brand new class of mutants, I'm in.
Yeah. Yeah. Except when they brought the original five to the present.
Well, that's not really a new class of mutants. Okay.
Bendis is just such garbage at fucking writing. Sorry. He just doesn't plot. Wish he knew how to fucking tell a story instead of just being like, look, a bunch of shit happened. Are you satisfied? No? Oh, well.
Are you not entertained?
So, it took a while for me to realize that, right? Because, like, a lot of stuff happens. And then you finish an arc and you're like, what the fuck was that? It's because there's no story. It's just a bunch of stuff that happened. But yeah, we don't have to do Bendis again. And yeah, royalty sad if he gets to miss shitting on Bendis.
Pretty regularly.
Yeah, because I really don't like that man. That's not fair. I'm sure he's a lovely human being. I really don't like most of his comics.
What else?
Right. I played the start, like under 5 hours of three JRPGs, but more than like 3 hours of all three. The first, Skies of Arcadia. So I'm going to do a weird contrast between all three. So okay. Skies of Arcadia is like almost everyone who played it, one of their favorite games. Mm-hmm. I have two problems. Problem one, I actually figured out a solution to. I'm literally listening to the music on YouTube. It stutters a little bit on my 351. And it annoyed me just enough to be like, I can just YouTube this once I get the start of the song for an area. Oh. And it worked fine. The other problem is it's really, really, really hard to figure out where the F you're going when you're in your airship. Walking around, it's easy and fine. And like, I didn't have any problems. But in the airship, figuring out where you're going is completely obnoxious. And it's obnoxious not because just flying around is hard, because there's a million games that just let you fly around, but because the random encounter rate is just slightly too high.
Okay.
And I am not a person who hates random encounters. I've played like three Dragon Quests and a couple of Final Fantasies during quarantine, right? So I don't hate random encounters at all. I think they're fine. I think that the random encounter rate is... it is very hard to get right.
It's been a very long time since I've played it now, so I don't remember.
I mean, it's fine when you're on...
that seemed.
It's fine when you're places. It's just slightly too much when you're on the ship. But, like, I'm on the ship and I'm slightly lost, right? So, slightly lost, and then I'm in a random battle.
Recalibrate after the fight, basically. Yeah.
And it's just really obnoxious. So... I'm going to take a break. Someone randomly on Facebook sent me a map, right? So I'm going to take a break. I might wait until quarter two of next year when I have our next prop later, and mm-hmm. I can emulate on that machine instead. That feels like it might be a better experience. It might stress me out less because it's a bigger screen and so on. So this really stuck out to me because I really wanted to play a Tales of game forever. Have you ever played a Tales of game?
I have not.
So they're basically playable animes for all intents and purposes.
Okay.
Like,
do you just mean the story is really heavy on
the story,
tropey anime beats, or like a lot of cutscenes?
Yes, all of it.
Okay.
I'm again, 4.5 hours in. Like, I'm a little bit further in that than the others because it's just so light and easy. But, like, what really struck me were the quality of life changes, right? Like, you can see enemies on the field. But even if, like, there were too many of them, like, your goal, where you're going, is clearly laid out on the map. That doesn't show you everything on the map, but it shows you enough to know, like, where you're supposed to go. Like, it marks out quests on a map. And, like, that's relatively new in RPGs, right? But that kind of quality of life feature goes so far in not driving me crazy. East also does it, where it's just like, hey, you've got a map, and the map's not perfect, right? Like, there's different levels, and we're not showing you all the levels, and if you leave a level, maybe you'll miss a little bit. You'll have to scroll some. Fine. You have to do a little work with the map. That's fine. But, like, if you want to just move, you can also not check the map for that or just wander until you find it. But, like, if you want to go here, if you want to progress the story, here's where to go to progress the story. And, like, holy shit, is that just better for me? Like, I'm not, that might have annoyed me when I was 15, right? When I had limitless time to play. Mm-hmm. But as a 39-year-old, like, I don't have time to be like, which of these barren floating islands is the one I need to find? Like, I'm just going to fly around this map and have 1,000 random battles. And as I'm going to do so...
Just think how high of level you'll be, though.
But I don't... annoyingly, it doesn't heal you after battle. It's still early in the game, so I don't have a lot of magic or a lot of healing items. Mm-hmm. So, like, I can blow all my gold on healing items, I guess. But, like, you don't heal as you level up. And you don't heal when you save. So you have to go find somewhere to rest to heal.
Mm-hmm.
None of that is very user friendly. Whereas Tales is literally just this light, fun anime romp. It's clearly not as good. You can tell when you play something, like, or I can, I've played a lot of JRPGs in my life, like, the quality of game. Like, Skies is doing something, right? Like, it's clearly a game that knows what it is. It's smart. It's well put together. It's like, it's going to be a great game. Like, I have no doubt. I could tell at the beginning of Dragon Quest 5 or 11. You can tell when you play Final Fantasy 6 or 7. Even if you, like, I don't like 7 very much, you can tell that it knows what it is. It's, like, built to be a classic. Tales is built to be bubblegum that waves at classic.
Yeah, I could see that. Bubblegum, I think, really encapsulates a lot of the tone of that game.
So Tales is fun, and I would be playing a lot more of it, except that battles seem to consist of exactly two things. You sort of button mash until you figure out combos, which is fine, but they're, like, super basic. You occasionally block and dodge, which is literally just hold L1 and sideswipe. And in the middle of your combo, you can use one of your arts, which is basically your super move, by pressing R2, and that'll let you continue your combo longer, and you should be careful when you use it. There's not a magic, like, stat technically, but it takes a certain amount of time to recover that. And, like, that's the whole combat system, at least so far. And, like, okay. Every single, like, it's very pretty. It's basically cel-shaded art, right? Like, it's very pretty. And the story is just interesting enough to keep me going with its anime tropes. And, like, the characters are all anime trope. Everything is an anime trope. Like, it's 100% anime trope. But, like, it's just interesting and fun enough to keep me going. And the battle system is just boring enough to make me go, maybe I'll just keep looking for something else. So I think what, like, it's actually, the battle system isn't totally dissimilar to the East system, which I really enjoyed. But the East system has enemies on the map, whereas the Tales series takes you to a different screen to fight. And that difference is huge.
Okay.
Because it's an exploration action battle system, right? And they both play reasonably similarly, except one is fast-paced because you keep going as you fight. And one stops your progress every time you fight, even though it's an action RPG.
Okay.
And, like, I really like the latter. The former. The just, like, let you keep going. Which is the third game, Nier Automata or Automata. I'm not actually sure how to pronounce it. I've heard it pronounced both.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I always sort of thought it was Automata, but...
So, it's another one of those games that's brilliant. The prologue is stupidly hard. Like, I kept dying at the boss of the prologue until I cheated a little bit, put it on easy for just that fight, and I'll switch it back. But, like, it's, like, half shooter, half Devil May Cry, part RPG. Like, it is... you're in spaceships, you're in mechs fighting. The mechanics, luckily, are basically the same for all of it, so it's not overwhelming. It's fast, it's stylish, it is just a really cool game. And, yeah. A lot of people I respect consider it one of the best RPGs of the last generation, one of the best JRPGs ever. It's immediately easy to see why. I'm hoping, now that the prologue is done, it bothers to explain some of its systems, because the game has not. It literally just dumps you in, like, in media res. Like, you're on a mission, go.
Okay.
Not fun. But everything else is really, really awesome. And yeah. Yeah. I wish Skies had some more modern convenience, or at least chilled out. I will still play it. I am going to wait for the Steam Deck to play.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you pre-order?
I did not. I did not get in on that. No,
I have an extra pre-order, sir.
What?
Well, I was unable to get in, and our good friend Matt Clemens was just like, I'll try. Well, because we were about to play Magic, and got in immediately. And I was just sort of like, as we were playing, absently clicking on my phone, and also got a reservation. So there's an extra one if you want it.
I might actually, yeah.
I think it has to be paid for around December, and it comes out quarter two of next year.
Okay, I mean.
So it's the base model, right? I don't need the fancy one.
Okay, that was going to be a question, was if it was a reservation for a specific model or just in general.
So, I mean, I'm not going to be playing AAA modern games for the most part.
Right.
Right, like, I might play, like, a Tales of Arise type game, possibly. But, like, even that, I should be, if that's PlayStation 4, this thing has about the same power as a PlayStation. It actually has closer to a power of a PlayStation 5 than a PlayStation 4. Even the base model.
Yeah.
So
it's not the power I'm worried about, it's the storage space.
So,
the jump from 64 to 256 is pretty just big.
Just spend $30 on a memory card.
Does it actually have a card reader? Did I miss that?
It absolutely does. It does.
Okay, I guess I missed that in the expansion. Okay, there we go, SDS, DX.
So I'm just going to spend $30 and get a nice giant card, and, like, who cares? That solves that problem.
Yeah.
Right. And everything I want to emulate, I can emulate. It should emulate up to PS3. And, like...
That should be everything I really need, right?
I mean, I don't need anything in the PS3 generation.
But that, so, like, as long as up through 2 is probably the latest I desperately want to emulate.
As long as you can get me to PS2, I'm like, that gives me my Shadow Hearts, my Dark Clouds, like, it gives me everything I want. So, yeah, I have Steam. I bought a bunch of games last year before I realized that, like, I'm really never gonna play games on my computer because there's too many other things to do on the computer.
Yeah.
But I will sit at my computer and play games portable, because that's what I do with the Switch. That's what I do with the 351. I do that on my phone constantly. Mm-hmm. I will take that with me, and that is basically perfect. Now all those Steam games I have a home. Like, that's how I'm going to play Persona 4 Golden now.
Not everything's going to translate perfectly, but a lot of my library will, I think. I mean, I'm probably not going to be playing, like, my copy of Civ 5 very well on the Steam Deck, but...
You should. If it's got PS4 level power, yes, you should.
No, not power. I'm thinking interface and controls.
Oh, yeah, I could see that.
Like, where it's more... designed around a keyboard and mouse kind of combo. I mean, with a touch screen, you can fix some of that. So, like, we'll see. I'm definitely excited about it.
I'm trying actually to see what the fuck is in my Steam account.
I just hope
profile. Where would it be? What would inventory probably, right?
Library, I think.
All right, we cannot make listeners listen to this. I feel like listening to me look through Steam to figure things out might be the danger zone.
it is, but I want to add one last parting thought to
Sorry, go for it.
Just on the Steam Deck about I had seen it kind of posited in a few places that this is not strictly just a like Valve only product, but that it's kind of a spec template for other companies to build off of, kind of like video cards, right? Nvidia or AMD put out like their baseline model and kind of a spec range, and then let individual makers, Asus or whoever else, kind of tweak some stuff from there for their own models. So I have my fingers crossed, like this is pretty much exactly what I would want out of a new Sega console. So you know what, Sega, like just take these base specs, slap a Sega logo on it, and let me give you money.
Well, everyone should have a dream.
Whether or not it will ever happen.
Yes. No offense meant.
Yeah. And now my Sega fanboy dreams definitely put us in the danger zone.
Yeah. Yeah. Either way, Steam Deck's going to be awesome. I'm hyped for it.
Yeah, agreed.